Hello and welcome to the Serious Games Podcast, all about playful methods for interactive trainings and facilitation. Let's get started.
And welcome back to the Serious Games Podcast. Well, today I'm honored to have two guests, and I had to learn, I still need to look up, Kajaani in Northeast Finland. Jussi is joining us from Topazia, and Viro, we discussed 12, 13 years ago during a LEGO Serious Play conference. We met for the first time. Viro Kupers is located, you're close to Germany, in fact, East Netherlands, Yes. The reason that all three of us are meeting is because you have developed, you are a fan of a gamified dialogue tool, and I really want to know more about, and I think a lot of listeners want to know more about how it works, what it does, how you use it, and how it adds value to all those business challenges out there. So first of all, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I will start with my traditional questions. What should our listeners know about you? And how would you explain Topazia to someone who's never heard about that concept or even that word, which I learned means topic in Finnish?
Which should go first? Viro or me? What do you think? Should we have a paper?
Yes, paper. Rock, paper, scissors is the best way to determine that.
Yeah.
There you go, Viro.
You got it, Viro. You got it.
Awesome. What people should know about me is that I dove into using playful interventions due to another German guy who once told me that he used LEGO Serious Play to solve strategic issues. And it was like being struck by lightning. And at that very moment, nearly 13 or 14 years ago, I noticed that I wanted to re-release my inner child and involve playful elements in the serious work that I do. And one of the tools that I'm using nowadays is called Topazia, which is indeed a Finnish gamified dialogue tool, which I actually use for every case where there's a group of people that you wonder, what do they actually think about this and this topic? Mm. So it helps to get them on the same page and make them make wise and informed choices.
Wonderful.
Which is where I leave it for now, that we have a whole podcast to dive
absolutely
into.
Thank you, Viro. Jussi, what about you?
So two questions. What should know about me? My pronunciation on Topazia, what it is.
Absolutely.
Questions. Yes. Maybe because I can imagine that the listeners are interested in serious games and maybe designing serious games. So I think what should know about myself is that I've been focusing on developing one method for 11 years now, and only keeping it to that only one method, which is Topazia, from kind of these paper and pen versions to printed game, and then a digital game, and now AI powered the same method, and then on the way got some also research and so on. But I think that like focusing on only one, I think maybe that is the thing. And then what Topazia is like, Asia is a Finnish word for topic. So it's kind of the point of the game is to find the top topics to, through a certain dialogical method, to come to like what is important for us from all of these important topics. Really structured way for that. So it's not the open table, it's a top topic, finding that. So that's kind of, I think. Yes.
Thank you. Let's dive right in. I understand, you know, this one platform, this one game, mified approach to finding the right topic. I could just imagine doing this 11 years, there's a whole set of scenarios and topics we could, and clients we could now talk about. But I would like to invite you to maybe deep dive into one or two, right? So if a client calls you, what's the goal then? I mean, finding that one topic, yes, but we could do that probably with stickies and duck voting, right? So what are you looking after in a challenge that you say, oh yes, I might want to use Topazio for this?
If I may start, I think business is always difficult. So if a client calls and wants to, I would be just amazed. I would go and buy champagne if that would happen every day. So that's a really good. Let's keep this kind of a dream reality that it goes like that every day. The client calls, not the other way. But I think it comes from. Because this is interesting because we started first from these team development topics, which is a really red ocean. You have multiple different solutions there. So we started from there, but now if client would call, as they call every day, we would focus now on if they have a strategy implementation, they should implement a new strategy, or it's an organizational development topic, like, for example, employee survey result, you find some kind of topic and you kind of deep dive to that. Or some kind of cultural shift. And then what we are piloting now, which I'm quite excited, but I will maybe have something to tell in a year, in the merger and acquisition situation. So this is what I would, when they call every day, I would talk at today, but 10 years ago about team development.
Yes, wonderful. And Vito, I understood you're not involved since 11 years in Topazio. But when and how did you get to know it? Where you said, "Oh yeah, that makes way more sense to tackle it with this gamified dialogue rather than doing something else."
Well, I've been using other tools for a while. I already mentioned Lego, for example. And I recall that it's not last Christmas holiday, but the one before. Then I had a chat with one of our Finnish, facilitators of LEGO Serious Play, on the topic of playfulness. And he mentioned that there was this other tool to sometimes be more convergent in the work that you do. So most of my tools that I'm fond of using are quite divergent. So opening up perspectives, triggering imagination, and this Topazio tool that was about to start like a co-creation project in which you could bring your own topics to the table and see whether it could support you in the dialogue that you have with your clients or your clients with their clients or colleagues or business partners to really get to a shared decision. Which I think I didn't cover before in the other tools that I use.
Yes.
And Jussi just mentioned those applications in team development or also in one-on-ones, which you didn't cover, Jussi, but one-on-ones and strategic implementation. But I noticed that I prefer to make use of Topazio in situations also where there's societal issues at stake or at certain topics where multiple organizations are involved. So complex matters in between organizations or in between teams, which is also kind of a new appliance, but also a situation where you bring people together and you want to have them on the same page or at least understand each other a bit better.
Wonderful. And now that we have the owner and creator in the room, in the call, you see, what was the need, the challenge that originally triggered that idea to do something like Topazio and to gamify a dialogue?
There was no need. That was made it so difficult. But for the latest comment that Viro said, I think, because I like to think about the if you design a serious game, I think it's a serious manner and it's a certain kind of craft also, even though it's fun and playful. I give high value to the, like a Viro experienced facilitator with multiple. I give high value that someone who's experienced see the value in a tool. That gives me kind of this
feel of that it's good enough, kind of. But yeah, regarding the first question, the question you said, there was no need. It was more about, I was really interested in a certain concept of dialogue. And then good games. So I didn't have a background on games and these kinds of, it was more about good games to help to have this kind of dialogue to happen. It was this really ideological approach. So there was no need that I knew or something like that, of course. But that was kind of the baseline.
Okay, gotcha. Well, let's figure out how, you know, it brings value. If you are preparing a session and you want to run it with Topazi at one part, what do you need to prepare? So how does it all start? You know your client, you know your challenge. You might have a half a day workshop, full day workshop, a series of meetings. What do you do? How do you prepare it? Like really hands on, physically, technically.
I think we should have two hands. Or would you like to start?
Yes, I think I would like to start. At first, to make a little correction on the thing that you mentioned, Julian, because one thing that strikes me in Topazi is that it's an appliance which only takes 75 minutes to get to certain decisions with a group of, well, say about 10 players, participants. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know what kind of group of people you might find in the room or online. So the first decision is whether you want to do this online or in a room, but with a hybrid setup so that they can see the online platform and they can see like a behind the scenes of also the notes that I make as a game leader. And then now we're introducing Topazi in the Netherlands. We usually say that there's three like knobs that you can adjust. First being the game deck that you use. So when you play a game of cards, then usually there's 52 cards or something, like spades and hearts and cups and that kind of colors, suits. So at first, one knob that you can adjust is the deck itself, so the game deck. What kind of topics do you want to put on the cards and what kind of explanations, what kind of statements go with that? The second dimension is with what kind of perspective do you want your players to look at those cards? And that perspective can be what is the best option at this very moment? What is the most inconvenient truth in this one? What is most important to address? So you can decide which kind of perspective, what is the perspective for a certain game round that you want people to play with? And thirdly, it's the what we call the crystallization phase. It's thinking of what one, two, or three questions you would like people to answer after they have come to their top topic. So that's the three things that you can adjust beforehand before setting up Topazi. And when you want to dive into a certain dialogue on a topic that the people that you have in the room care about.
And Vidra, can you make this very concrete? I mean, a fictional client or maybe your last client, so that we can better understand. So you want to pick a topic because I'm really interested in what's on that card deck and how it works and how limited you are when you're selecting it or if you can even create.
Yeah, well, one of the interesting cases I think that I came across is a dialogue that I set up myself together with a business network here in the region where I'm active, and together with the vocational education this region. And the main reason for that is that here in the Netherlands, higher education and scientific education is valued more than vocational education. Whereas for most of the regions, the jobs that come from vocational education are really relevant, but mostly undervalued. Mm-hmm. And there's this premise that we need to find a way to bring education and business together to, well, to revalue mm-hmm. that for regional development. And I set up this dialogue with 12 mm-hmm. people in the room, some representatives from bigger companies in this region, but also mm-hmm. Teachers and directors working in education, mm-hmm. usually mostly vocational education. And what we tried to address was this question, how we can revalue that kind of education again, but also give kids the feeling again that the thing that they learned, that they really matter and that they're not overlooked. Mm. And during this dialogue, we did three perspectives.
Okay. Can you name them?
My mind was going around this game deck mm-hmm. that I made. So I made the game deck, which was about the value of education, about internships, about how people in companies, what's their take on what happens in education, mm-hmm. And something more on regional development in general.
Okay. And Vero, just to make it, well, I'm happy to include any kind of pictures or link anything for our listeners. Mm-hmm. But what was on those decks? Are we really talking about a card with like a statement or a quote or something from a newspaper or a fact, a study maybe?
No, so it's four mm-hmm. colors, just like we're used mm-hmm. to when we're playing poker, for example. Mm-hmm. Each color covers a certain general mm-hmm. topic. Within each topic, you have 8 to 13 mm. cards, which have one word or two words as a mm-hmm. as a topic on it, just like a queen or mm-hmm. seven or whatever. But underneath that, a little statement, mm-hmm. and it can be a question or a statement or something that illustrates the mm. topic. And usually I'm trying to look for something which also triggers something in people. So it might be a bit provocative every now and then.
Okay, got you.
And the whole idea is that if you have this set of 25 cards, that it should be interesting for people to, when they have a certain perspective, that it's interesting for them to make that selection or select that card, because it really covers what they would like to bring to the
table. Absolutely. And you see there are many card decks already in the system, right? Can you share what other card decks and topics we can find, and how were they developed in the first place?
In the first place, like at the moment, many times it goes, at the moment it's good to say that because you have the AI deck builder kind mm-hmm. of that you can use the AI in the software to mm-hmm. create the content to fit your need. But how it started is that there are different kind of like these ready-made curated mm-hmm. decks like sales and marketing, systems intelligence, customer experience, mm-hmm. agility, successful project, different leadership mm-hmm. for the different decks. But how it kind of, that was important for being motivated also, how it started that I ended up meeting with some professional in the field, and then because it was all about co-creation then and still is, like, okay, let's do this mm-hmm. kind of content. And then we made the content, which is more like I facilitated, it was a dialogical mm-hmm. process to kind of get the person who is in good knowledge in that field, for example, psychological safety, to kind of get that information mm-hmm. in these statements, in this type structure. Yeah. That's kind of how the decks were created. So all of them were co-created mm-hmm. with some professional in the field. But it was this called general deck, which doesn't have statements. It was more about, I wanted to see how much you need the content mm-hmm. in the cards. So I just came up with that kind of with the headlines to see how the method, like, is it enough? It is enough, but the content helps also a lot. But it came like mm-hmm. that during the years.
Wonderful. And you know,
it was a learning process in that sense, a really good learning process, because I got really educated well from all this.
Thanks. And Vito, going back to your conversation and the participants, which perspectives did you choose? Which is another set of cards, right? Well, at least it's presented as a card.
Yeah, I usually tend to make a choice within something that is appreciative and something that it, that might be a barrier, and usually something with regard to the near future. Mm-hmm. But in this case, I chose three more positively framed cards, so more hopeful, yes. Hopeful frames, you could say. One of the perspectives was, what are you most hopeful about? One of the perspectives was, what is one of the things that we tend to overlook? And one of the perspectives was, what do you think is the most important thing in general that we should develop?
All right.
So more positively framed perspectives, not per se looking for weaknesses or for hindrances.
Gotcha. All right. Before we then later come to the crystallization, how did it all start? I mean, you're all in one room. Is that a one group activity? You got 12 participants. How are they distributed, and what do they need to participate?
Do you is that a question about this actual use case or about Topazian?
Yes, I hope this question is valid for both setups. but maybe you can give it a little bit of an insight. How would I need to structure the room, the groups, and how do I manage if, you know, someone's not having a smartphone or a smart device with them? So what do we really need to kick it off?
Maybe I can start, and maybe Viro, then you can add. I think it's it starts with the communication also, that everyone knows what is the topic of the session and what is the intention, why you, this is kind of basic, but I think I would underline the what is the intention of the session, because the intention can be guiding to actions or deepening understanding or form some kind of critical approach to the topic. So I would really explain these to make sure everyone really can participate and be interested and involved and know what is it used to, why is it done, and so on. But this is, I think, basic, but I still want to underline it. So going through that, and I think then it's just starting, and if someone is not having the phone, you can just do it in pairs. You ask your neighbor, do you have the phone, kind of. I think that's kind of the easy way. So I think that's maybe, please, Viro, you can continue, I think.
Well, the how Topazia started was as an actual physical card game. So back in the days, people could just play with the physical cards. But there's this limitation that if someone else has a certain card at hand, that you cannot see it. So having Topazia as a digital tool is really helpful, but indeed you need a device to join, a mobile phone or a laptop can also do the trick, and you can indeed just play around with other people or make people work in trios or that kind of things.
I want to comment on this, Viro, and please continue of this, but I think also kind of what we rely a lot on is, because it's being a game in a sense, even though we don't need that, it kind of gets you on board. With the physical game, it was really easy because you play the game, you have the cards and so on. We kind of have that with the digital game also, but we really rely on a lot that the game kind of, you get to the flow. Thinking about the setup, please, Viro, continue.
And what I notice is that while the platform is digital now, it makes it easier to run an online workshop, for example. But still, real dialogue usually happens best when people are in the same room. So I tend to choose for a hybrid setup where people make the choices in cards and also give their input on a device, but that the dialogue itself happens in the same room where people discuss what cards they have selected.
Got you.
So it's also I think good if you want to foster a good discussion or a good dialogue that you have the room set up accordingly, and that people also feel invited and have the feeling that they're on the same table and that they're there for a dialogue and not to just play a game and select some things on their sofas.
Correct. And look, I will link this onboarding YouTube video that you have out there anyway, so that, you know, of course you enter a code and you start a session and then everyone types in a name. And that's clear these days, I would say. But when you start around, I am presented with that perspective. Again, that's pre-selected. And then I get a set of cards, right? I don't get all 25 cards, right? Maybe Viru, walk us through what happened when your participants opened up and saw the selection of cards and those facts and everything that they read. What were they asked to do? Well, to select, and you mentioned that already, but how did you frame it back in the days?
I tend to frame Intopasia that this is like a serious game. It's a gamified solution, and there's only one game rule, and the one game rule is that we come to a selection of that thing that matters the most at this very moment with this group of people, and that's actually the rule and one in your own individual selection within one game round. But it's also the one rule when we need to come to one card for that specific perspective, yes, as a group. And also when we want to get to the topathia, the one thing that's important for the whole group regarding all perspectives that we address. So that's one main thing that I tend to do when we start a discussion round like this. And nearly immediately, I show on my screen as a game leader that I'm taking notes. So people get to see a maximum of 5 cards in their hands. They can make adjustments, so they can ask for a new hand, or they can decide, I want to keep those 2 cards, but I want to have 3 cards see differently. So that if people want to, they can see all 52 cards. But usually people have in their first or in their second hand, they see a card that strikes a chord with them. And when I ask them to give an explanation on why they've selected that card, and when they see that I am making notes in the explanation that they give, then we bring all opinions that are in the room to the table, apart from just the selection that we force them to make.
Got you. And here's an interesting thing that I heard, right? So this is not because in the intro I was saying, yeah, we could have used stickies and dot voting, right, to do that. But again, this is not a way to converge to make a selection because we need to move on only with one or two topics, right? No, this is the reason that we're meeting, right, to find that one. And
it's the reason that we're meeting, but it is convergent. So it is bringing us to the one thing that is important at this very moment.
That's a joint, goal that you're offering, joint framing. So at the end of the day, we will have that one topic. Huh? And you see, just for my curiosity, obviously I would imagine that they're randomized, right? The cards that are presented to the players are then... So everyone gets a different card, yeah?
Yeah. I think that is also a relevant point, what kind of one of the point of Topazia, that you have certain randomness. It's called a little bit controlled randomness, but it gives the reason for the alibi to bring up topics. And that is, if that is lost, you lose something. You need to have certain kind of randomness so you can have the alibi that you can bring the most difficult topics to the table. And that comes also from research that has been done from Topazia, from Professor Harvian. So alibi is one, it's crucial, and the randomness is part of that. It took a long time to get over the randomness because there was no reasoning. For example, I didn't have the reasoning why randomness, why is it kind of good, why it makes sense. But now it's there, it's kind of the reasoning is there, it's the alibi. And then in the end, people still bring up the topics they want to talk, but it makes it a little bit more safe. And then also another point, when you start the dialogue in the round that people have played the cards, you have actually 2 different ways you can start running the dialogue. The second one is kind of like everyone explains why they chose the card that they chose. This breaks the alibi, but it doesn't matter. But the another way is that you are restricted to tell that what was your decision, so you really protect the alibi. So you talk about the topics that are on the table. Everyone knows they are relevant, but we don't tell who chose what. So there's two ways. Both works. It depends on the situation and how the game leader thinks of the situation.
So, it's an interesting point. So, of course, I get to select the card and then I reveal the card and then explain why this card resonated most, why I selected this card. But then you say, there's also a way that we just see which cards were selected.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you make sure, and Vitor, please chime in, that it's not the first question everyone asks, who's choosing that card? That makes no sense. I don't believe in this. This is not relevant. Don't you all see? And then the loudest, voice in the room wins, or there's groupthink, and everyone says, now that we're seeing this, that's so true.
My comment to that, and please, Vero, tell maybe in a better form, my comment, because by design, you kind of, if you do it like that, everyone sees that we lose the whole point. Kind of, maybe I believe the system, the method itself protects from that kind of behavior. Oh, but of course, we know that there are these kind of, based on the research of Harvey, and that there are these so-called silent gatekeepers who kind of can really affect the dialogue. Like say that I played this because that they really don't want to keep it anonymous. So in that way, I think Harvey and Viro said about the loaded gun, or use this kind of metaphor. No, that's the wrong metaphor. But if we think about the Topazia is used in by team managers in this, we cannot control any of this. It just goes as it goes. But when there's a facilitator, of course, then it's that much more controllable.
Yes.
So they are both this kind of wild, wild west and then more controlled approach.
Yes, and I think it's important for us as facilitators to understand that it will have an impact how we behave and how we hold the space, or how we ensure it's a brave space, or how we frame it and how we model it and how we intervene if such things are revealing itself.
Yeah, but it's also that. I recall that Edwin, my business partner in the Netherlands, he introduced Topazia in one of the courses that he delivered in higher education. And when you onboard the game in Topazia, you're asked to either give your own name or go with the animal name that is predefined for you. And in that course that Edwin delivered, all students chose to keep their animal name, whereas nobody actually knew who was behind what name. And students, they joined the game, they made choices. At a certain moment, there was asked, who made the selection of this card? Nobody replied, nobody raised their hands. But in the end, it was the card which was most discussed and where nearly everyone had a clear comment about, and also included the comment in the online platform. So it brings some safety every now and then to people to know that they can hide behind a certain name and that they can join a dialogue anonymity.
Yes.
You're the
yes,
American
stay anonymous.
Word, you know,
anonymous. Yes, yes.
It better than I can.
so you're saying it can help, that layer can help to be inclusive, and then to got you. Now, how do you start the discussion? If we now see on the screen, let me pretend we see on the screen those 12 cards that have been selected. There might be some duplicates. Okay, so let's say we're left with a selection of card. How does it continue then after the selection moment?
There are two ways that it can start going, that you start explaining why you chose, or then we just talk about these topics. But in this, we really need to trust on the idea that people will start. They are important topics for them. It's an important context for them. It matters what they bring to the table. So we really, in the end, need to trust that the dialogue starts to pile up. And there are different ways. You can also just rely on the silent being silent as long as things have to happen. But I think it should start that someone just starts to speak up. You have enough these kind of triggers for that. You have already the context. You have it set the perspectives. You have made decisions. They are on the table. You know, everyone else have put also something. So that's my approach. I really need to trust that it starts from that.
Yeah.
And usually when there's this 12 choices on your screen, then there's a huge chance that you see a certain topic and that you hear a certain explanation that really fits your own preference as well. But you didn't speak up because you hadn't seen that card, or that you didn't know your motivation yet. So what we tend to see is that people join others who made a certain choice, or that people sometimes, like the discussion that I just mentioned on the vocational education, there were people negotiating. So there was this certain card which they wanted to collectively choose in round one. And there was another one of which they mentioned, well, maybe we can address that one later. And if we cannot get to a discussion, then we will show a preference to that one.
Okay, got you.
And so people tend to be willing to make a common choice. And if they don't, we can always start a voting round.
Yes.
Or in the end, as a game leader, get to a final decision to move on to the next game rounds. But making notes of the motivations that are being shared.
Yes, and again, reminding them of the rule, right? The one rule. We're here to find the one thing that is now important.
Don't shoot the messenger, but it's only this one game rule. We need to get to one choice. You need to get to one choice. So good luck. I'm going to get coffee.
Yeah, and I think it's also this kind of that you can use the vote also as a technique. When you have the cards played, you can start with vote also to focus the dialogue on those that get votes. And that also takes make sure the alibi a little bit more strong, because you can then talk about that get the votes, not the what someone chose. Yeah. So there are options, of course.
Still, as a game leader, when I choose to do the voting, then I tend to include like a hint of deep democracy afterwards and check in with the people who didn't vote, whether they're okay in moving on to the next perspective. So I try to get their heads on that specific perspective before we move on.
So voting, and I understand there's also timer option, and then note taking. You just mentioned that briefly. You're taking notes while the conversation is going, right?
And participants can do so themselves as well.
And then
so along the way, they can respond or give comments on their own cards, but also on the choices that are.
And what type of comments are you prompting them for? I mean, is it really the three things why you have chosen this card, or this one hashtag, or really a longer micro story on how this fact, this card connect, with that perspective and what matters to you?
I think the last one is the one. That's the point. Otherwise, the dialogue will start if you then kind of get the story going.
So I'm now imagining, right, there's this triangle of selection, listening, sharing, note-taking, and slowly a decision is emerging, or maybe not, but we're getting somewhere. So we maybe reduce it to three cards. How long do you keep this going? I mean, I can imagine that, the cards trigger, but now there's such a rich conversation going on in the room. So I could imagine the group is diverging now again, right? It's like, oh, now we see this and this connection and this nod. And oh, by the way, did you see this card? I didn't choose that one, but it's now I feel it's also important, right? So how, is that something that you facilitate, or do you really leave it with this? Okay, guys, you need to come up with this one card because that's the one we're going to tackle first. Means we can also tackle others later, and that's the one we're going to make actionable or act upon, whatever that means in that context.
Both. So there is some space to discuss why you chose which cards, but I won't allow a discussion to focus on things that are not that don't align with the intention and the topic that is at hand. And I won't let them dive into discussions too much. Also, because I have I have a certain time slot in the back of my mind that I want to finish the game in 75 to maximum 90 minutes. Also to stick with the attention span of people and to keep the flow. So I won't give them too long. And also I want to have I mentioned those three perspectives with the three playing rounds. Usually I prepare three, but I prepare to play only the first two. So I can add in the third one when the energy is right, when things are moving well, when we're still in flow. But I want to be able to skip the third one, or maybe to skip a third crystallization question to keep the energy well.
Let's say two cards, one card is selected. What's next? I mean, how does it continue? Are they? Yeah, we got a card now.
You have to the rounds.
And we got personal commitment, right? I mean, that's what we're looking after, right? That the group, the table says, that's the one. I understand. I heard everyone. I you know, been in that discussion. I can commit to that this is, at this very moment, the most important.
In the end, kind of, if you have two rounds, you have played two rounds. You have two cards on that table, the kind of the final cards. And then you need to choose the top asia, the top topic. Which one of these is kind of more influential for us to reach our goal or the intention of this game? Which one we want to go deeper to? And you just need to make, that's a kind of the ending of the game, because the crystallization phase is a little bit different, because that is kind of, you don't finish the game if you don't choose the top asia. Kind of, you are really driven to that. Everything is important, but you need to kind of come to something based on what you have discussed.
So what will happen if they made the choice?
What's then? What's next?
So you have the top asia, and then you go to crystallization, which is designed based on what's the intention. Like in the basic flow, you have the questions. For example, your top asia is mutual goal, shared goal. That would be the top issue, top topic. And then you, in the context of better teamwork, that's the topic of the game. You have five questions, that what is the desired change we seek? What are the challenges in improving this? Why is it difficult? What are the opportunities if we improve this, make this better? What activities could maybe help us? And then based on these, is there anything we actually can commit to doing? So it's kind of, that's the basic questions in the crystallization. But of course, you edit this based on the need and the intention of the game. But I think it's important that you have in the end kind of what we could maybe do. And I think this is really, of course, familiar to you. But you need to have so much happening beforehand until you get the commitment.
Sure.
Like, is there anything?
So I understand these are kind of brainstorming questions, right? What's a change, a challenge, opportunities, activities? And then what could we possibly decide on is just another, you know, commitment moment, right? And is that something that is also facilitated by the method? Or is that really now back to the facilitators or back to the group that has now understood, this reduction is helpful because it can lead to action rather than unlimited discussion.
Well, you have a dip there, because when you've chosen the top asia, the energy levels, the whole thing changes, because you don't play cards and these kind of. It's really more difficult to keep people along. But now in the digital version, in the questions, of course, you can ask from players. You get the players committed to write these post-its. And then they can put thumbs up, like this, that the other ones wrote. Just, and all of these are to keep, like, every feature and technique in the whole game or the method is to make sure people tag along, and it helps to kind of form the mutual mm-hmm. understanding. Like this, you give thumbs up to the post-it mm-hmm. notes. That also to, just to make sure that they read them, because the crystallization phase is so different in the energy, in the flow. You don't play cards anymore, so you might have
deep. And can you share what was the card your group has selected on the business vocational education discussion?
Yeah, well, it was surprising to see that this group of business people and education people, that they came to a final decision which covered the role of parents and specifically the role of mothers in the choices that their children make in their future education. And specifically in the image that vocational education has, or the future jobs in technical industries, apparently the role of mothers is hugely overlooked. Mm-hmm. So they came to the conclusion that it would be really worthwhile in tackling this issue to get mothers specifically on board.
Interesting.
I tend not to choose for the five default crystallization questions. So also in this one, I created one question which was more specifically and action focused, focusing on if we choose this topazia, what specific things could we do tomorrow to bring it to reality, and a second question also to maybe to re-anchor the value of the topazia, focusing more on what do you think that we might see in the near future if we bring this topazia to life? So what will be the ultimate effect of it? And that were also the two questions that I involved in this specific dialogue. And so on the one hand, to make this topazia actionable, and on the other hand, to make them imagine what would be the value of it, so that they step out of the dialogue also with the idea that it was valuable to have this discussion. And afterwards, they will receive the game report anyway and are able to see all the things that they brought to the table.
And then we're going to talk about the data points in the game report in a second, but I understand, of course, at this point, it really depends on what the workshop outcome was, right? If we were here to have that shared understanding or better understanding of a topic, or if we want to, you know, elicitate, derive with concrete actions, or if we want to have a critical review of a topic, right? And see, not only different voices, but maybe different perspectives. Okay, data. You're creating a lot of data, right? Who's choosing what? You do know at least which machine is which animal. and there's a data report. What do you do with all those notes, with all those micro decisions with that report?
We don't do, but the clients do. For example, when one of our clients, they now had a strategy implementation. They had the first round, more general, how to understand better the strategy in all the levels of the organization. Then they used that data to see kind of what comes from that. What are conflicts? What are seen important? So on, so on. And then they have the second round, which is more focused with the teams, what kind of goals we get to ourselves. But it's more that you use the data, for example, to form better understanding what has been talked, what is relevant, is there kind of strategic initiatives that we should actually launch from top management for the whole organization. For example, these kind of case studies we have also, or you can, at the moment with the AI, you can also use it that you have the data in the organization about the certain dialogues. For example, on strategy, you can create kind of a deck based on that data. That data shows a certain problem, or a topic, and you can ask the AI to create a specific deck to deepen that dialogue. So it's, we don't yet kind of understand all that you can really use it. But that's for the, it's for the client's use. Many times it helps the manager.
Gotcha. Yeah. And what is reflected afterwards, after this full gamified dialogue experience, including, you know, maybe even with the data report that is sent afterwards. But what is the deeper reflection, feeling, aha moments that
those should happen in the game? Those should happen in the process, during the process. I don't see that it happened after that. It happens during that. And then if it's successful intervention, then the things start to happen in the kind of everyday life, that maybe the dialogue culture changes a little bit in the team. We get this kind of feedback. But if the insights and those are done, they happen in the method, during the game. I think, Viro, you can have a different points. Or it's more difficult to kind of get real grasp that, okay, that was that. Of course, there are clients who have done, like, after the strategy dialogue, some research, like, is strategy better understood for us? And those are good results, the ones who have done those. But I think insightful-wise, it should happen in the games. Because somehow, it's a reflection also. Yes, please, Viro.
Somehow it seems that many people that I have on the tables in my workshops, they are really fond of talking, and sticking with their own opinions. Mm-hmm. And on the one hand, I see that the paying clients are really happy that they get to a certain point in no time, and people on the same page. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, I hear people say, wow, we've never came to agreements this fast. But I want to include this and this and this and this and this because we didn't have a discussion on the. So it's also a bit inconvenient probably for them as it's not the way they're used to having conversations usually, or not the way they're used to having meetings usually. So it really fosters something that's valuable in organizations, getting to discussions, and moving forward together, including all the voices in the room. Mm-hmm. But it's also a bit of an inconvenient truth for people that they can do this and that they don't need to stick with the usual way of sometimes also not being involved in dialogue, but more in discussion, maybe.
Wow. What is your secret sauce? I mean, what is really the reason why it works?
The alibi, the data, and the one that it helps to pronounce, to really helps to bring, give wording to the topics.
And for you, Vera?
Apart from the things that Yussi mentioned, I think that there's a huge value in who is the game leader. Mm-hmm. When I started working with Topazia, I did have a dream that this might be a solution that helps people to self-facilitate their dialogues. But more and more I see how valuable it is to have someone to hold the space and ask the right questions at the right moment and make sure that everybody's still on board when you finish your dialogue. Mm-hmm. So also the role of the game leader, also in beautifully AI-powered games, cannot be obvious. Yes.
Yeah. And you see, as you said, you know, there are different energies and dynamics in the different phases of, you know, initiating that conversation, coming to a decision and then, you know, moving on to crystallizing and even afterwards, right? And at one point that meeting is over too, right? And that's yet another way of leaving the room and going back to dynamics that maybe have been there before. Yeah, but
I think also, like, I agree with Viro that you, that good facilitator is highly valuable. But we are at the same time in the reality that I don't think that we think about organizations in the world. I don't think they have the resources to always have the facilitator. I could imagine that many team managers are not interested in facilitating, even though I think they should be, but are not. So this kind of, I see that then how it can help these that are not interested in facilitating, but we of course know what it brings to the table, and there's no maybe the resources, so that this kind of gives something that holds the space enough in these kind of situation. And I agree with Viro also, of course, what he said.
And of course, I mean, Open Doors, and my podcast, that facilitation is very much needed, but of course, holding the space, where you mentioned it, guiding and navigating through the different phases, you know, and how it works, you know, if it's on a mechanical side. But then also reflecting, mirroring back, encouraging or challenging here and there is something, I think we did not record that, right? But at the beginning, before we started the recording, we were... You mentioned, you know, that's something, of course, AI can never take out or take away. No. The human-to-human connection. Wow, we covered a lot, from the mechanics, the flow, the example, the data point, the card deck. Again, I would love to link a lot of things where you show more of the topics and maybe even a card or whatever the front end looks like for the user. But there's one thing we did not cover yet. You see, you mentioned it. I mean, 11 years, you've been doing a lot of research and you've you know, developed a certain amount of card decks. But what are questions that you tackled with research, maybe just some exploratory questions? And what are you currently researching and trying to improve?
Actually, the mention about the research, of course, I have but I also the academic research that has been done. That was what I was the most pleased that happened, because that brings the different credibility, and because I'm out of that process. So that was really interesting. But one also comment back to the facilitation, sure. Then I will ask the question about someone who is really experienced in facilitating, I think can really play with Topazia in different manner. Like, you can go easy with this kind of creating the deck to be kind of positive and this kind of more easy topics. But then if you want to go difficult, you create it so that it kind of brings fuel to the really critical approach, critical perspective in the dialogue, and to like rub on the face the negative approach. I really think that is where someone who is experienced facilitator can play around with the teams, and that brings value, because you can go really much deeper to the negative critical content. And hold the space.
So you're saying the cards could be the sliced up elephant in the room, right? You really bring the topics that we should discuss, we should at least focus and be aware of, and then, you know, through the selection, you know, we don't, maybe you invite participants to not question if these topics are relevant or not, but, you know, which one is more relevant?
Yeah, and then it's also like what we've been playing about, how can you use that the content of the cards is satire or ironic, this kind of, to make it really difficult. That's kind of for the ones who are really interested in facilitator, that can play with Topazia more. I think going to the kind of darker layers, I think that's the way. But what I now am excited, I'm really now doing kind of my own research, which means doing and thinking. I'm trying to build a single player game. Like, that's difficult task, because why would you stick on a single player game as an individual, as you are, for example, in a good book? And that's what I've been now prototyping lately. And I have some ideas on that. The negativity is part of that.
Yes.
Yeah, to keep the kind of the...
I have to look it up. It reminds me of an app back in the days called Unstuck, which was also a card selection app. I'll shoot you over that link. Yeah,
thank you.
Wow. Is there anything we have not covered in our conversation?
I think the difficult also when designing serious game and design games is how to get it from nice to have to must have. That's the business model difficulty, and that's the tricky part.
Yes,
I think. But we don't need to cover that, of course. But I just want to mention that's kind of, it's brutal, and that's the difficult part.
And you mentioned the possibility of making use of data from previous mm-hmm. game reports mm-hmm. into developing new game decks. Mm-hmm. But it also brings the possibility to have a continuous dialogue or mm-hmm. yes. foster a continuous dialogue culture. Mm-hmm. And that the step from having this one trick pony kind of incidental appliance of a game-like solution like Topazia is into embedding that in something that's more structural. Mm-hmm. That's also yes. well, something that the method has in itself, but it's not that easy to get it running. Whereas it has this massive value. It can have this massive value, mm-hmm. but it needs people to really take it along with them and use it for all the one-on-ones and dialogues and strategic discussions and HR topics that they have.
Absolutely. I'll link that. I guess you have a page with more use cases. Yeah, and one-on-one is another one. Sometimes I do just contrast it with what is the alternative anyway, right? Yeah, we can have endless discussions and then of a commitment or that commitment that ends the moment you leave the workshop room or literally press that hang up button on Teams. Or we could really try to not only make sense of the deselection, but also the you know, how it emerged.
In this, I think like we are in the field of participatory organization development. I think so that if we think about clients, they should have that kind of approach the organization develops and how the organization is lead, because otherwise these kind of methods, game, it's kind of, they don't fit. It's kind of theater. Of course, this can also be, but I think that's a relevant point.
I also believe that the method that we as facilitators, consultants, choose, they also send a clear message to what is important to us. You know, in fact, I would also go as far as that I'm saying, you know, you are the method in terms of, you know, it so represents on what you value, how much you trust, how much you, you know, lead and ignite whatever topic or goal or strategy you want to follow. So I definitely think... It's also showing a lot about yourself, right? And then, aka the organization. If you say yes, let's do this in co-creation. Yes, let's do this with a discussion and not a fancy framework and fancy colored dots. Let's talk it out, right? And through that, learn together and become better together. Thank you, guys. For sharing showing that a conversational game is more than that conversation and the method, that the flow and how we facilitate, how we navigate through those different dynamics can have an impact and create value within, again, a team or you mentioned, you know, various stakeholders. Great. I'll link everything. Your LinkedIn profiles, your websites. If someone wants to get in contact with you and ask a follow-up question, yeah, you can, of course, always also write me, and I'll channel it to Vera and Yussi. And with that said, thank you so much for being a part of the podcast.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you.
It was a pleasure being
Wonderful.
Here.
And I looking forward to see you around on those various conferences that are upcoming. We certainly talked about it before we started the recording. And for all our listeners, have a look at all the archives. There are many, many, many episodes that show you the value of game and play-based approaches as well as facilitation. Till next time, bye-bye.
You can reach us at hello@keylearning.net. We're looking forward to your suggestions, comments, and feedback.